Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Punk Rock MBA podcast.
Really quickly, before we get into this episode, I wanted to mention my Patreon. Patrons get all of the podcasts a week early. I do giveaways, I do some other stuff, but most importantly, if you want me to review your music or artwork or anything else, Patreon is the way to do that. Every month, I do a call for submissions. All you need to do if you want me to review something is just post it in the comments of that post. Then I will review it live on Twitch for the hundreds of people that tune into every stream and post it on Patreon for everyone to check out. All you need to do is just join at the $10 and up level. Stay tuned for that post and you are good to go. So if that sounds cool to you and you want me to review your music, artwork, or anything else, hit the link in the show notes for this episode. And thank you very much to everyone who supports over on Patreon. Jake, welcome to the show. Thank you for making time for this. I have a lot of heavy questions for you about theology and the search for meaning and all that kind of stuff, which I'm very excited about. But first of all, you have a new album coming out very soon called Death Below, courtesy of our friends at Sharp Tone. What can you tell people about the album and what to expect for that before we get into the heavy questions?
Absolutely, man. Well, first off, I'm thankful to be here and be on the show. I appreciate you inviting me. And I'm excited for our conversations. But I think for Death Below, the record coming out March 24th, you know, JB and Dustin, our guitarists and bassists, are our main songwriters. And I think during, you know, this whole pandemic situation, they really just wrote how they felt. And I think in that time, like many others, we were kind of facing some struggles, isolation, some fears. And as a whole, I think our band was kind of going through a challenging time. So a lot of the music on this record is, you know, gloomy, dark, kind of has some sorrow to it. And it's very progressive. So it's definitely a record of its own with its own identity. I think people will resonate with it because I think that they themselves will connect with the feelings and emotions that the music and the lyrical content carries. And, but it is unlike something we've done before. And I find it to be very, unique and beautiful in its own way. So, but I'm very proud of it. And I think it's, something very special.
I've heard kind of similar things from a lot of bands about albums that they did during the pandemic. And I think maybe a lot of fans may not understand how stressful that is for you guys because, you know, nobody knew how long this was going to last or what was going to happen when things were to come back. And most bands, I mean, you guys do well, but it's not like you can just chill without making money for 3 years or something. And it's like the pandemic took your income away, most of your income away from you, took, you know, your lifestyle away from you. And you know, that was a much more stressful situation for bands than I think a lot of people may realize.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a challenge going from touring 4 to 6 months out of the year to absolutely nothing. And I do believe that we tried to do the best with what we had. We had like a live stream. We were, you know, recording some songs in the studio, trying to stay connected to our fans and stay active. There were some, you know, some bands didn't really have much there. And so I think we tried to scrape together as much as we could. You know, it was really unfortunate because we had just, we were on tour when, you know, the whole world right. shut down, and we were about to release our record Guardians. And, you know, we were thinking, well, what should we do here? Like, should we not release the record because now we're not going to be on the headliner promoting it? But we actually felt that it was important for our fans to have music in this time and something to be excited about when things felt very shaky. But yeah, I think overall, you know, we made the best of what we could, and we're just all very thankful. I think it was a good moment for artists and just for people in general to be thankful for what they have and realize that life is fragile, things can be taken. And it also might have inspired artists to dig a little deeper as being unique to themselves and creating something even more different or human than just going, oh, we're going to write a catchy, you know, right. catchy song or, you know, whatnot. So
yeah, it made a lot of people sort of ask fundamental questions about life that maybe they'd never really thought about before. And, you know, feel their own mortality in a way that a lot of people, you know, in their 20s and stuff. I mean, when I was in my 20s, I never thought about that, you know, but with COVID, everyone's like, oh shit, like any of us could actually just die tomorrow.
There was definitely that fear being present. And I think isolation and having to be, you know, a lot of people were alone during that time. I think that that does give you some time to self-reflect and to think about your life and how fragile it is, for sure.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I wanted to ask you some heavy questions, because I know you have a lot of interesting things to say about this. So just for reference, or so you and anyone else listens, I'm not a Christian myself, but I've always liked Christian bands because I felt like their lyrics were about things that were more me. Like, I didn't ever really care about people just like, fuck you, dad, I hate the cops, blah, blah, blah. Like, to me, that's always felt like kind of trivial. Whereas a lot of Christian bands were asking much more kind of fundamental questions to me, which is like, what are we doing here? How are we supposed to live? And how do you know if you're doing the right thing? You know, just these sort of like very basic questions. And I was watching some interviews with you to get ready for this. And there was one thing that you said in some old interview that I thought was really interesting. You were talking about how you, before you became a Christian and joined the band and stuff, you were into alcohol and girls, and you said it was because you wanted to feel love and that you used music as a more healthy way to find that. Can you tell me more about what you meant when you said that you wanted to feel love?
Yeah. So with my background, I grew up kind of in a toxic family household. So my parents, both great people, and I love both of them, but you know, they were in an unhealthy relationship. And so there was a lot of verbal abuse and manipulation. And growing up as a little boy, a lot of times it was very scary in my house. And my stepfather, once my parents got divorced, my stepfather was also manipulative and verbally abusive. And I felt like...
To you or the whole family? Or
to me. Yeah, to me specifically. And so just kind of having this upbringing where I didn't feel appreciated, or I didn't feel like I was safe, or I didn't feel, a lot of times I felt like I was always walking around in eggshells, and I couldn't maybe be myself, or I had to be very careful what I did or how I acted, watching your parents kind of continuously arguing and lashing out at each other and perhaps saying really, really hurtful things about one another to you, mm-hmm. kind of feeling used, you know, I kind of ran to alcohol because I was introduced to alcohol when I was younger. And I had a friend who was older than me. You know, I spent a lot of my life trying to find a father figure. So I would go to older guys, you know, and older guys could be like 2 years older than me, you know, somebody right. who had some experience under their belt, maybe lived on their own or was a leader of some sort. And
because when you're 14, a 16-year-old seems so much older.
Absolutely. You know, when you're in middle school and there's a high school kid there, you're like, oh man, like he knows the way, you know. So I really struggled with understanding self-care, self-worth, and what love even was. You know, like sometimes I would say to myself, like, even if love came to me at my front doorstep, I don't even know if I would recognize it, you know? And so I tried to find that in finding a father figure. And a lot of the guys that I met, I mean, you know, they worked really hard and they drank really hard, you know? And so a way for me to kind of self-medicate and to numb myself, but also be able to feel like I could say whatever I wanted to say, I would drink, and I would drink with these guys who I looked up to and felt safe around, and they weren't trying to manipulate me. They weren't going to scream and yell at me or demean me. They were telling me their life story or things to look out for, or, you know, watch out with this or work really hard for this and things like that. And so, you know, that was a big part of my teen years, and then finding music as far as like going to shows, and that had a community of people that felt like they were black sheep and felt like they were the underdogs. And I could resonate with that community and that music. And so it really just gave me a safe place to be myself and kind of figure out who I am and what I needed, and was kind of my home, because my other home was very confusing and toxic and divisive. So yeah, I mean, I feel like with where I came from, it was really hard for me to understand or comprehend what love looks like, how it acts, and how to connect with it.
Well, the reason I ask that is because I feel like there's a lot of musicians who are looking for love, especially vocalists, who are looking for love through the validation of strangers, of fans, because they kind of fundamentally feel unloved and they don't love themselves. And they think that if there are hundreds or thousands of people telling them they're great, that that's going to fill that hole. And it never does. It almost feels to me like, you know, that is a false god that a lot of people worship, if that makes sense, especially musicians.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% that, you know, due to trauma or due to the lack of something, we're going to search for it.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me as a human being. If there's something that you're lacking, you're going to go try to find it. And the reason why I became a front man was because when I went to my first hardcore show, there was a band called Strike Anywhere.
Yeah.
And you know, you're familiar. They're just amazing punk rock hardcore band with, and I saw them in this really small venue, 200 cap, called New Brooklyn Tavern in South Carolina. And the singer, long dreads, just ripping on stage, looked like a lion. And just, I had never seen so much energy come out of a human being. And he was preaching his gospel, right? He was preaching his truth and what he believed and what things he wanted to change in the world, and, you know, his words of encouragement. And I was so just blown away by him. And he steps off the stage and I run up to him, and I'm, you know, 16 years old, and I have a Sharpie in my hand I got from the bar, you know, and I'm like, dude, I'm just so blown away by you. I don't really have anything to sign. Will you sign my arm? And he said, yeah, absolutely. So he signs my arm. He gives me the Sharpie back. I'm looking at his signature, looking at the Sharpie. And then I look back up at him and he's like, now you sign my arm. And that exchange that we had, because, you know, again, I'm looking for a leader. I'm looking for
right.
someone to show me that I am worthy, that I have purpose. And he showed me that, hey, I know you wanted my signature and you just saw what I did, but you're just as important. Mm-hmm. You have just as much purpose. You have just as much worth, and we are equal. And that's the moment that really I had an opportunity through that experience to find a purpose and to recognize that there is great power in the authority that this individual mm-hmm. carries through being the front man of a band. And I said to myself, I want to do that. I want to be that guy, you know? And so that was really the fire starter for me. Not only did it give me direction and it gave me purpose, which is something that I so desperately needed at that point, to know that I had a purpose and things like that. But, you know, here we are on our 20-year anniversary tour for August Burns Red. And, I've been able to make an impact with the music industry and our fans and in what I believe a positive way, you know. So I'm very thankful for that experience and that moment in my life, because it literally changed the course in my journey.
I mean, it's amazing how one interaction like that, which was whatever, 20, 25 years ago, can really change the course of somebody's life. And you never know who you're talking to at any moment that might be having that moment with you.
Absolutely. And I try my best to recognize that and spend time with fans. I mean, in the beginning years, you know, I made a promise to myself that I was going to go to the merch table and talk to fans. And at first, you know, it was like maybe 10 people. And then it grew to, you know, me standing at the merch table for like a couple hours after we played. I'm a faith man, and I'm, you know, just very thankful for what God's given me in my life. And, you know, I don't like to put my faith on people. I don't think that's respectful, but if people want to know about my life, I can't deny my own truth.
And you shouldn't. I mean, why? It's such an important part of you. Why would you hide that?
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, I'm on tour with the Day to Remember. We played back-to-back shows in Chicago, sold it out. And I was just at the hotel that we were staying at, and I was just like, God, thank you so much. Like, this is amazing. This is unbelievable that this is my life. And I really would love to give back. Like, if you can show me or tell me what to do that I can give back in a more meaningful way than just being on stage and then, you know, having some conversations. And this vision came to me that night of creating an online community for, essentially in the beginning, for my fans to be able to share about their stories together. Because what I was realizing over the years of going to the merch table was, I'd hear stories of, you know, hey, I'm sober from, you know, I'm clean of heroin for 3 months. I wake up every day, you know, with my sober buddies and we listen to Composure. Or I was sexually assaulted when I was a child and the song Redemption has taught me to, you know, forgive and find healing for that. Things of like that, really deep, personal, challenging experiences that my fans felt they could be comfortable to share with me. And I would go, you know, I would talk with them and then I would go to my trailer or, you know, or my van, excuse me, or my bus, and they go home to the same situation. So this vision came, I was like, hey, we can connect and stay connected with these fans, with these stories, and let them know and understand that there's other people that have experienced similar things and they can, you know, be encouraged and grow together. And maybe somebody's like, hey, this really helped me, you know, get healing, or this is my story. And just hearing someone else's story could benefit that individual. So I made this website, I made little cards. And so with the website on it, and so that when I would meet people at the merch table, I would say, here, take this card and go here. And then I would go to the website and, you know, try to interact and just build this community. And so it really led me to, you know, not only this band and being blessed to, you know, live a dream, but it grew into this other thing.
Is this Heart Support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's my nonprofit Heart Support. And so it's just wild, you know, how things can progress and grow. And, you know, I never had the desire to start a nonprofit, but through the experiences and the journey that I went with this band, there was this new desire in me to want to create something like that and to help. And so, you know, that's where I'm at.
Yes. Yeah. You mentioned people sharing these stories with you about how your music or your words helped them, which I'm sure feels amazing. The flip side of that, which I have seen a lot of people in particular in Christian bands kind of fall into, people who I think really did mean well, and I don't think they're malicious, but you can tell that they got a little bit lost in the sauce and almost started to feel like they were saviors and act like that a little bit, which I totally understand. And again, a lot of these people are like 22 and nobody was like, if I heard that I saved someone's life when I was 22, I don't even know how I would handle that either. So I get it. But my question is like, how do you kind of stay humble? And have there ever been moments where you've caught yourself kind of getting a little bit lost in the sauce?
Absolutely. So there was a time in my life, and I would say that probably the interview that you were referencing was probably the birth of my religiosity, because I was so infatuated with my faith and the Christian faith. And I still am. And, you know, obviously I have many more years and experience under my belt, but there was a time where I had become very religious. And the really hurtful thing is that I ended up hurting a lot of my family and people around me. And I was very judgmental towards myself, which thankfully I've had the opportunity to make amends with my family for. But I think that, you know, one of my friends says, hey, you know, like the enemy, evil, whatever it is, what do you think it would want you to be if it can make you be anything? And I was thinking, oh, a murderer, you know? And my friend says, no, a religious person. Mm-hmm. Because you are taking what you understand and comprehend of your faith. And sometimes instead of letting God be God,
you want to be God. You want to be Jesus.
Right. You feel like you get all this understanding, and then you're like, oh, now I can tell people, or I have the answers. And so I went to seminary for a bit. And as I was reading this book, it was called Debating Calvinism.
I've heard of this one.
You've heard of this book?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think so. I had a friend who also went to seminary, and I'm pretty sure he told me about, well, go on. I'm pretty sure this is the book he told me about.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For a non-Christian, I'm a pretty big fan of Christianity, so.
Okay. That's cool. So there's this book, and it's got a Calvinist and an Arminianist, and these are just two gentlemen that have just different viewpoints on doctrine. And, you know, they have two different sides of how what they believe in their faith, but they started to bicker in the book. I'm reading this book, and one of them calls the other one a dog or something. And completely not the essence of what I believe is the foundational grounds for Christian faith. But I get this vision in my head, and it's of a sandbox and two little children, right, building sandcastles in the sandbox. And they're pointing at each other, arguing which sand castle is better than the other. And God says, do you see this? I said, yeah, you know, I see this. And he said, they're children. They have no understanding or comprehension of me. And they're building their own castles using the same sand. And then the vision like kind of got further away from me. And it was like galaxies, right? Like stars and all this stuff. And, you know, I had the verbiage, you know, this is everything that they're missing. Mm-hmm. Please don't do this. You know, please don't put me in a box. Please don't try to have all the answers. Please don't restrain me and have a leash on me because of your comprehension or understanding of interpretation from what another person has said about me, because I can't work there. And I'm not bashing seminary. I am giving you my personal experience through going to seminary and what I felt led to do based off of how I felt and the vision that I got. So I stopped. I chose not to continue my schooling.
So what was like the kind of fundamental issue, meaning that you felt like it was getting into that mode of like arguing about sandcastles?
I feel like for me personally, it's important that spiritual connection that I have with God, and that's really important for me personally. And if I consume myself with just the study of God,
yeah,
and the understanding of what man has understood of God versus the experience of God, which is two very different things, I could just become a shell of what I think knowledge. And so I want God to work in my life. I don't want to try to be God. And so that was kind of my personal friction point at that time. So yes, to answer your question, I apologize for getting a little off there.
No, not at all.
There are moments where I think, as any human, when being glorified, and you see it all the time, especially with pastors, celebrity pastors, right?
Yeah.
Like you see that too, where these pastors are like Jesus to their congregation. And the wild thing about that is that the moment that that human being who is a pastor makes a mistake, a lot of times the church will excommunicate them.
Right.
They won't try to surround that person with love and grace and understanding and try to solve the issue. They'll just cast them out. Obviously, that's not okay. But, you know, in those moments and in those times, you definitely try, if you want to be humble and you don't want to take advantage of that, you do recognize it and try to face it and say, okay, hold on a second, you know, because I too feel uncomfortable when someone says, you saved my life. I did not save anyone's life. I might have been a vessel, catalyst, tool, resource for you, just as much as the singer from, you know, Strike Anywhere being a vessel, tool, resource for me to feel and make some sort of connection. And I'm glad that I could be of service, but I am not saving anyone's life. That's not my position. And as a Christian, I don't believe that that's my position. I believe my position is to love God and to love others. And, you know, we can get into the, you know, the sticks with all the little, you know, things and what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And, you know, quite frankly, my understanding to some of those things is I'm still growing.
Meaning, like, if someone asks you about some, the getting in the weeds with some particular verse or that sort of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we're so hungry to know that we're either right or that that's the truth and there's nothing else. And what I'm learning in my life is that if we believe in, you know, the Bible, or we believe in life, it evolves, it's growing, it's constantly moving. And I'm not here to tell you you're wrong and I'm right. I believe that there is a life and that we're all working on separate experiences and journeys. I do believe that there is a God. And the only reason why I believe that there is a God is because I believe that I'm having experiences with God and God's doing things in my life. And I have worked very hard to try to have a father in my life, and God was like, I'll be your dad. You know, like, you're running to all of these men and they're all, you know, men, they're humans, yeah. You know, but if you, you know, come with me, I will show you what a man's supposed to be, and you'll never be alone. And so that offer for me sounded pretty great. That was a beautiful invitation for me. And I find, you know, Jesus' story to be a love story and my relationship with God to be a love story. So, you know, I'm not out. And I think that that's why I might've turned from the seminary, because I had a vision saying, don't put me in a box. So I didn't want to learn all of these things and hold on to them and just be like, nope, that's the only way that this is going to fit. And right. I don't think that that's my job. I think my job is to love people where they are and let God be God and try to be sensitive to loving people the way that God has loved me in my life. And again, also give myself room to recognize that I am human, and which that is a humbling place to be, because there are times where I feel like I'm God, and you know, and that's, and I have to check myself at the door, which I try to do, you know, but yeah.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
You mentioned the importance of men having a father figure, which I'm glad you did. I think that's like such an important message that I know there's going to be some people listening to this are not going to be happy with me saying this, and you don't have to agree with it. But I feel like in the past, I don't know, probably 30 years or something like that, like the idea of the nuclear family, and in particular, the importance of men, has been kind of under attack. And I know that that's not a popular thing to say, but like men need a father. And I understand, I mean, my parents got divorced. I don't know my birth father. Like I understand that sometimes families don't work out. I'm not judging anyone. I totally get it. But men go off the fucking rails if we don't have a father figure in our life, which like the person I call my dad is not actually my birth father, but he acted like it. And, we go off the fucking rails if we don't have a strong man in our lives.
So I understand that has become a political issue.
It's not political to me. It's not. It's just a fact of life.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was going to say. Like, I feel like just in general, society has politicized everything, right?
Yeah.
But let's just, for people who are listening, because obviously you and I are on similar pages. Let's put all of that aside and just look at life and humans and people and how we work. You know, when my parents got divorced, my mom had no money, you know, and she was working two jobs trying to provide for myself and my sister. And we ended up living in lower income housing. Now, in lower income housing, there are a lot of moms that are moms and dads and have to provide and protect and nurture and help their children grow. And the shit that I saw there is really sad.
Yeah.
And really can mess you up.
And shout out to all the moms doing all of that, by the way. Like, this is not a criticism of them at all. Like, I have tremendous admiration for them, and we should do everything we can to help them because that is an incredibly difficult situation.
Unbelievable. The amount of stress and anxiety that I saw my mom going through. But, you know, I mean, I was selling toys on the street. I was hanging out with gangbangers. I was selling jewelry at school, Trident gum for 25 cents. Like, a lot of these dudes died early and young. Yeah. A lot of their, you know, dads were dying and were going to prison. And it looked very dark and gloomy because there wasn't a lot of opportunity there. The schooling system wasn't very good. The people that were there were hurting, and there wasn't anyone who was taking the charge saying, hey, we're going to do this. This is the plan. Mm-hmm. I need you to be this. I need you to do this. I'm going to shepherd you. I'm going to love you into the position that you're supposed to be. And so we're all running around with our heads cut off. Now, there were gangs that were like, oh, we'll gladly take you.
We'll give you direction.
Oh, yeah. We'll support you.
Because that's what you're looking for as a young man. You want direction. You need it. Even if you don't understand that, young men desperately need and want direction.
100%. And yeah, it's a real problem, in my opinion, because men with no direction are scary.
Yes.
We can be very scary because there's something in us that innately wants to be God.
Yeah, to control, to fight, to dominate things.
Right. We want to create, we want to build, we want to, you know,
yeah,
you know, not necessarily dominate, but, you know, we want to be in the front of doing something that is creating, whether that's creating, building your family one day or building your own business or, you know, whatever it might be. And if that doesn't have direction and there's a lack of that direction, I feel like we can fall into the unhealthy thing.
That's when you start a gang. Like, I'm going to build something. I guess I'm going to build a gang if you don't have better direction.
Yeah. I mean, it's just wild. I mean, I just think that the family unit is important. And, you know, kudos to my mom for being able to really raise me the way that she did, because I feel like, considering all the variables within the wild equation of how we lived our lives, I came out fairly good. You know, she did a really good job, but I do think that, you know, a father figure is important. And I believe that due to the lack of mine, I met God and look at Jesus as, you know, what a man should be, and what a man should look like. And so, you know, now I just, for myself, is the change that God has done in my life. I genuinely just want people to experience that. That's why I share when people ask me about my faith, is because, like, I genuinely want people to be able to get out of the things that I got out of, heal from the things that I found healing from, have comfort in the moments when I'm, you know, sad and struggling, have someone to cry out to that I believe is going to show up and help me navigate the stormy waters of this life. That's honestly what I want for other people. And I feel like it's a good thing. And I feel like, you know, for a man like me who didn't have a dad, it's God saved my life. And that's a legitimate statement. So, that's what I want for people. And I understand that what I experience is not what other people have experienced with faith. And I think that religiosity not having the tender understanding of God's relationship in your life and being able to hold on to that in order to be a catalyst for love, for God's love, and just judgmenting people leads people away from God entirely. And they want nothing to do with
being a Christian and being close to God are two different things, right?
They absolutely can be. I think that Christianity is about God, but I think that what we tend to do is we tend to take what we want from this beautiful story and then use it. And instead of inviting God into our lives to let God work through us, we tend to go, oh no, this is how it is, and this is the only way it is, and you've got to do this and you've got to do that, you can't do this.
Right.
And you know what ends up happening is no one gives a shit about you. The person you're offending is gonna go, dude, fuck you, bro, and walk off.
Right, I'm out of here. Yeah.
And then you're never gonna see that person again. And then that person, 5 years down the road, someone's gonna be like, yeah, God's been so great in my life. And you know what they're gonna go? They're gonna go, Jesus, don't want anything to do with that dude.
Yep.
Fuck that guy, because of what the experience that they had previously with another human being. And like, that's why it's very, very like, I got to be very careful how I speak. And in past years, I didn't do that because I didn't understand the severity of maybe what I was doing or saying. But I recognize that now, that I need to be very careful how I speak. And I would rather try to do my best through my actions to show people the gospel, versus just rattling off all of the cool stuff I know, because that doesn't really do anything for anyone. And now I feel like even like our communication is so damaged because we don't listen to one another. We don't try to understand one another. We feel like we are better than the other person and that we're not equal. That's what I'm seeing from society right now. And how are we supposed to grow together if we already have these walls?
It's like everyone is operating in such bad faith where we just take the worst possible interpretation of anything that someone else says. You know, if they're like, oh, I like the color blue. And they're like, oh, so you hate red and green.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's okay. That's what we're doing.
Why are we doing that?
I don't know.
You know, like, okay. So for example, like I have a crew member who's a staunch atheist dude. I love him to death. We have so much fun together. We connect. And I actually like sitting down with him and talking about some of these, you know, what people would say uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah.
Because like all that's going to do is strengthen me. It's going to make me question, poke holes in my faith or my understanding. I'm going to gain experience through the conversation on how to communicate things. It might trigger some thoughts that maybe I need to reflect on. I'm going to learn about another person's perspective. I might hear about an experience he went through that I have never experienced, nor have I ever thought about. Why are we so against listening to one another? And if we can base that conversation on love and respect and compassion, we all win. And you know, it bonds me with this crew member because I'm like, I don't see eye to eye with him on a lot of things. I may not condone his actions, but it doesn't mean I can't love him.
Yeah.
And vice versa. He may not condone how I live my life, but that doesn't mean that he can't love me. And I think that that's what we're kind of missing. And I'm seeing all this division.
Yeah.
And it pains me because I'm literally trying to do the opposite. I'm trying to get people like heart support. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter who you're in love with. It doesn't matter what you believe in, what you've done or what's been done to you. And those came from my vision when I started it the first night. I said, well, what's the boundaries here? What's the basis? God said to me, doesn't matter the color of your skin, who you're in love with, what you believe in, what you've done or what's been done to you. Do you know why? I said, why? He's like, because I accepted you and I didn't care the color of your skin. I didn't care who you were in love with. I didn't care what you believed in. I didn't care what you did or what was done to you. And so, you know, that is what I'm trying to, my understanding of how to love and serve God and serve people right? And trying to create. And I just feel like I'm seeing the complete opposite from society.
Yeah.
And we're hurting. I think everyone is hurting to some degree.
That's what it is. And they're taking out their pain and misery and frustration with the world on other people. And that's only making it worse. And it's sad. And I don't know how to break that cycle. I'm only one person. I don't know what to do, but it sucks.
You know, my dad told me, he goes, "Hey man," because I went through a really gnarly divorce in 2015. And, you know, I was drinking pretty hard and I was so angry at myself, also at God. And I said to my dad, I go, "What's the point? You know, what's the point of doing all this?" You know, and I went into some pretty heavy stuff with him, and I don't want to go into it here because I really don't want the listeners to start questioning that in their own life. I don't feel like it would be beneficial. And he goes, "Look, you've got your little piece of the map, and you just do what you can there, you know, and that's you contributing." We think that we have to be somebody at the top in order to make all this change. But if we were to all take it upon ourselves to make the change, the people at the top don't have the authority at all anyways.
Right.
Because, like, do you know what I mean? You can,
yeah.
Somebody could say, "This is the way it's going to be." But if all of you just
there's a million of us and there's one of you, what are you going to do about it?
Right. Right. Like, we are choosing to do this. So it's a choice that we have. And it can be a beautiful opportunity to not only change your life that you have and your purpose and bring you more fulfillment and joy through acts of love, but it could change the entire, you know, course of where we go as a society.
I mean, look, when I was a kid growing up listening to all these punk bands and stuff, I was a super hardcore atheist that, you know, looked down on any religious person and blah, 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 all that typical kind of stuff. I don't really know why. I guess because maybe I heard some like Christian hardcore bands or something like that. I was like, well, I'm not going to just be this dogmatic guy that won't even give it a chance. So I made friends with some of those people and I went to church with them and I went to Bible study with them. I went to some Krishna temples. I've been to, you know, Catholic mass with my mother-in-law a million times and stuff. And I don't necessarily... It's not like I became Christian or Krishna or Catholic or whatever, but I'm really glad that I did that because I learned and grew so much from it. And I took so many really, really important, like transformational ideas from that, that helped me a lot. And maybe even more importantly, when I was a kid, I was honestly ignorant and judgmental and looked down on Christians and thought they were stupid. And same. From getting to know them, I realized that, you know, I was just being a judgmental asshole. And I'm not saying that I have it all figured out or anything like that by any means, because I'm sure I'm still a judgmental asshole many times. But I just would hope that anybody, like, why would you want to go through life having any kind of like ignorant, judgmental ideas that are based on just a fundamental misunderstanding of reality, you know?
Right. I feel the same way you do. I was so judgmental towards the church, and I've been that way my whole life.
And a lot of Christians are, by the way. People may not know that, but there's a lot of Christians who don't like the church. That's a super common thing.
In my opinion, I have traveled the world and I would go to churches everywhere and they're all doing it the same way. And I thought to myself, well, that's weird. Like, we're supposed to be connecting with the Holy Spirit and unique in, you know, and they're all serving the same community or demographic. They're all structured the exact same way. And that just feels very organized, business oriented versus like, hey, this is how our church is because, you know, this. Now I can go back and forth, and I'm not bashing churches because I have plenty of leaders in churches that I highly respect and love, but I'm just giving my personal experience through my life. And that's the only thing I can give. But I realized that I was going through church and I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is tacky. This is stupid, blah, blah, blah. And God was like, hey, what are you doing?
And who are you to judge? You're just a guy.
Yeah. They're broken people just like you, bro. Like, shut. And they're here worshiping me. So what are you doing right now?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, maybe they look a little goofy, or maybe that person, you don't understand them because that's uncomfortable for you.
Right.
But that's where they find peace and joy and love and me. So
exactly.
Who are you? Who the fuck are you? And I was like, you're right. You know? And I remember I was thinking about this in my house. I was running around crazy by myself. And I was like, God, I need to apologize. I need to make amends to the church. How do I do that? I shit you not, dude. My friend Ben Sledge calls me. He's a pastor at a church. He calls me within seconds of me saying this. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, so I just pick up the phone. I'm like, hey, dude, I don't know why you're calling me, but I need to apologize for the way that I, and he knew where I was coming from and my backstory. And, you know, I got to apologize to him at least. For the way that I had perceived the church and judged them and all that kind of stuff. So it's just very interesting. But yeah, I feel like a good start for us who want to pursue faith or don't is really taking time to understand us, who we are, what do we believe is the point or purpose or life? What are we lacking? And where do we honestly believe we can find that? And maybe start there and go on this journey. Or if people want to encounter a relationship with God, you know, one of the things that I really like to do is journal. And I like to journal my thoughts and how I feel. And then I like to ask myself questions from those things. And I pray in the sense of I'm going to just invite God into this, into my thoughts, my body, my spirit, and my words, and just see what happens and what comes of that, and just try different things. But at the end of what I've seen thus far for myself is I see that we have a hurting world full of people that want to be loved, and we are messy and broken, goofy, silly, and quite many times misunderstood. And I believe that there is a God that has created these people. And I believe that God has a source of unconditional love. And the more that I can understand that, the better I can receive it and then give it. Because I believe, whether you're a Christian or not, that's fine. I believe that we were created for two things. One is to give love and one is to receive it. And we can't do either of those alone. So you said, well, look at these front men and, you know, they have thousands of people praising them. They want to be loved. They are receiving that love, right? What are they doing? They're giving what they have and they're receiving. People on Instagram, they want all those followers. Yeah. They want to be loved. They feel like that's a good way of them getting love. You create your own business. Right. You feel loved. You've given something. I opened a gym during the pandemic. I have my community there exercising and working on mental health classes and exercises. That to me is me giving love. Them flourishing and growing is my reward. That's them loving me back because it gives me purpose. It shows me that I am making an impact and they are growing from that and they are bettering themselves. And that's what I believe my purpose is. I'm going to give you one just brief story real quick.
Yeah.
And then I'll be quiet. So I built this gym with a bunch of people. I think that if we want to be successful, we need to have a body.
Your Life Gym is the name of it for anybody who's interested, by the way.
Thank you. So I need a body of people to help me. And that's exactly what happened. Pandemic, I wasn't working. The president of Arsenal Strength, which is a very, very high-end exercise equipment company, I went on tour with him. He was in a band called The Showdown. Him and his partners donated equipment to me for my gym. My realtor found me a beautiful gym space. That gym space was actually connected to a church, which I thought was hilarious and kind of chuckled at. But now I have learned that the people at this church are actually really amazing, beautiful people. And so creating this gym, one night I was closing it down and I was touching the equipment and I was just resonating with the thought and the idea that this was a dream and I am now touching my dream. And I started to cry and I was like, God, this is amazing. I can't believe that this happened. people's gyms are being closed down, and you brought the most beautiful thing you have to offer me, is people. You brought people to me to help, and we created this beautiful thing. I said, God, I really want to know my purpose, and I feel like I know it. I just can't articulate it with words. I'm driving my truck, and the verbiage that came to me was, for me, my purpose is to enrich the soil of community, and their flourishment and growth is my reward. And the reason why I love that is because I feel like I've never been able to express or explain that. Secondly, it's my dad telling me my purpose, not just some guy, or, you know, some dude that I look up to. And it has nothing to do with fame, success, money. It's literally just, this is your unique gift and purpose. And I want that for other people. I want other people to have and to know and to believe or to trust and have faith that they've got their own unique purpose, and then to live that out. Because I don't want everybody to feel like they have to be the same like everyone else, because I think that cheapens the authenticity and uniqueness and individuality of us as creation. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, I have one last two-part question for you. I think that one of the kind of common themes that we have talked about in this podcast is about like judgment and being judgmental, and like how to overcome that in our lives, because it's like such a negative force in the world. For me personally, I get very frustrated by the fact that there's so many, just to be honest, like negative, judgmental dickheads in the metal scene in particular. And I don't want to be angry with them, because I know that's not the right way to respond. That's just like my animal instinct, is I get so irritated with these people that I interact with them constantly. Just like, I fucking hate all you people, but I don't want to feel that way, because it's not going to help me. It's not going to make the world a better place. So my two questions are, number one, if somebody out there might be like, oh, I wonder if I'm one of those negative, judgmental people in the metal scene, what would your advice be for those people? And second part is, what is your advice for me to avoid getting angry and lashing out at those people? Because I know that's not the right way to respond.
Well, first off, we're all judgmental, right? To some degree, at some point. And I think for someone who might be like, well, am I that type of person? I would say, yeah, simply, how do you typically respond to people? How do you communicate to people? Do you shut them down? Do you listen to them? What kind of comments are you leaving on Instagram? Right? Like, what, you know, let's start there. Like, you know, yeah. I rarely leave. I don't know the last time I left a negative comment on Instagram, because it's just not, my time is valuable. And I would rather invest my time into positive things, because I understand that I'm going to either give or receive love through that. You know, that's where I would start, is how are you communicating to people? And then the second question that they should ask themselves is, how do they see themselves? Because, you know, mentally, if you have the perspective that you are a piece of shit or worthless or dirty, right, or fucked up,
then you're going to act like it.
Well, chances are your actions are going to follow. And yep. That's because I just talked about this with someone else in another podcast, that, you know, our perspective has a lot to do with how we live our lives, how we respond to people. If I were to hold on to my divorce and my ex-wife and what she did and what I did, I was not a good man to her. You know what that was. If I were to hold on to that, it would definitely shut doors for me in my life, and I wouldn't be willing to be close or intimate. I would be nasty. I would probably react with my feelings and emotions rather than taking time to understand something and mm-hmm. responding. So that's what I would say. There's two questions. The thing that I try to keep in my mind for when people are rude to me or judgmental or nasty, and I'll use my divorce as another example. Like, my ex-wife was not nice to me, and I had a lot of anger towards her. and a lot of resentment. And then I feel like God kind of showed me a vision of her as a little girl with a torn dress and bruises and crying and, you know, stains on her dress, and tried to encourage me to understand that she was broken and hurting. And so a lot of times when somebody is judgmental or they're nasty, there is something that is in them that they don't understand, or they have been hurt, or you've made them uncomfortable and they don't know how to respond to it. So right. They're going to respond in a protective way, like an animal would, where, you know, you come too close to its food, or you come too close to its cub and it lashes out. It's protecting through aggression. It's the same thing. We protect ourselves through aggression. Like, no, dude, fuck you. It's like, whoa,
right?
What just happened there? Right. So trying to understand that, like, man, that's a human. And I've had moments like that too. What can I do to better the situation? Can I help this person? And if I can't, I need to walk away, because I'm just going to make it worse. I'm not of any help at this moment. So I'm going to disengage. So that's what I would recommend. Now, to be able to think of all of this
in the moment
when you're getting heated is a completely different ballpark. But that's what I personally try to do to my abilities as just being a human dude.
Cool. Well, I appreciate it. I will let you go. Thanks again for making time for this. And I am excited to see the album.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, man. This has been a really interesting, intriguing conversation. I appreciate it. And we'll be in touch. Thanks.
Cool. Take care.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided, why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing?
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.